absolutely no idea this was coming. They transferred 3 battalions from the Gaza front to the West Bank to protect settler rampages against Palestinians, denuding the towns on the southern borders of the Gaza Strip of the people who could have defended against the attack by Hamas. This is one of the great deception operations in modern military history, and people are going to teach this. Leaving aside the war crimes, they're going to teach this in military academies for years and years to come. This is on level with the 1973 war in terms of deception and an entirely mistaken concept on the part of Israelis, thinking that you could do this to Gaza forever and that they would just lie down and take it.
And Rashid Khalidi,
this
news just came out from Times of Israel, also from the Associated Press. Egyptian intelligence repeatedly told Israel Hamas was planning something big. Warnings were discounted. This according to an intelligence official in Cairo. Your thoughts on this in the last 30 seconds?
It's very similar to what happened before the 1973 war, when Israel was getting intelligence that the Egyptian and Syrian armies were planning a major attack. And the conception, the conceptzia in Hebrew, that these people would never do such a thing, they're not capable of this. The arrogance that was involved in ignoring those intelligence reports in 1973 and in 2023 are among the things that led to this catastrophic outcome, which I think is going to change a lot of things in the Middle East in the months and years to come.
Rashid Khalidi, I want to thank you for being with us. Edward Said, professor of modern Arab studies at Columbia University. His latest book, The 100 Years' War on Palestine. Raji Sarani, Palestinian Center for Human Rights in Gaza, leading human rights lawyer, speaking to us from Gaza as the bombs went off. Ofer Kassif, member of the Israeli Knesset, and Orly Noy, board chair of B'Tselem, Israeli human rights organization. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Development and Events Committee meets on the third Monday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Hello, and you're listening to EcoJustice Radio, a project of SoCal 350 Climate Action. Our show presents environmental and climate stories from a social justice frame featuring voices not necessarily heard on mainstream media. Welcome. I am Jack Eit. On today's show, Indigenous Regenerative Intelligence, a Navajo Perspective, host Kerry Kim will be interviewing James Skeet, Executive Director of Covenant Pathways and Spirit Farm in New Mexico. James Skeet with his wife Joyce are the co-founders of Covenant Pathways, a nonprofit organization, and they operate Spirit Farm. James is passionate about reconnecting all peoples to the land through indigenous regenerative intelligence that integrates the ancient native wisdom of the biocosmology to create a haven where soil health, nutrient-rich foods, human health, and free markets can prosper for another 10,000 years. James's heritage has assisted in grounding him in the work he does as a full-blooded Navajo Native American from Van der Wagen, New Mexico.
Aloha, this is Kerry Kim. We are honored to have James Skeet joining us to share about biocosmology and indigenous regenerative intelligence, drawing on his Dene, aka Navajo heritage, and his experiences as the co-founder of Covenant Pathways and Spirit Farm. We thank the Tongva ancestors for their enduring presence, legacy, stewardship, and profound connection to this area. Our show comes to you from the ancestral homelands of the Tongva and all of their relatives. And we encourage listeners to actively align with and support the many Native nations of Turtle Island, wherever you live and beyond. Regeneration is a common theme these days, but does it go far enough? What of the spirit, biocosmology, connection to the land, to our good hearts and our original ancestral ways? Indigenous regenerative intelligence points to this reunification of that which has become separated through colonization, an extractive economy, and a reductionist mindset focused on production, self-interest, and materialism. Our future depends upon us personally and collectively returning and remembering our original indigenous regenerative intelligence in order to assist Mother Earth in becoming balanced once again. What has been despoiled and degraded can be transformed, revitalized, and renewed as we collaborate and cooperate with nature and once again live in service to nature and the continuance of life itself. James Skeet is here to share from the depths of his own indigenous regenerative intelligence and remind us why we must all embody an organic indigenous mindset where all things are sacred. Welcome, James.
Thank you. I'm really honored, Carrie. First of all, that's a lot of good accolades, but hopefully I can stretch it out to where we can cover some of this territory that you mentioned. I'm so excited to participate. I came from a very interesting background. I didn't know how to read until I was in sixth, seventh grade. And there was a wonderful special ed teacher that just realized that, you know, this guy is smarter than, you know, the whole special ed class, you know. So she really invested in me, and she taught me how to become literate in the European Western mindset. But just to make a note, from up to that point was my education from an indigenous perspective, from my grandfather's grandmothers, from my dad, my mom, which she didn't speak much English. And that's where I learned the Diné language. And I'm from the Jatlashe clan, which is a red cheek clan. It's a kind of a warrior clan, similar to Tkachitni and some other, it's sort of like the dog soldiers of the Napa people, the Diné people. And then my other side, my paternal side, would be my dad's side. And that's in the hierarchy of how we look at things, that carries some diplomatic Kia'ani, which is a very diplomatic, negotiates through different complexities of things, which these two perspectives, definitions of our indigenous ways, really, you might say, become salient as you move along in space and time and growing up and understanding the world and what your identity is all about. So,
well, James, that fundamentally how you learned, how you grew up, as you said, you didn't read until seventh grade, and that's not a bad thing. You know how in Western society they think that's a bad thing, but it's a completely different way of learning and being more experiential. And you are hearing things orally through oral tradition. The way that works with your memory and your embodied understanding is so different. And that's a fundamental difference between how a Western education, as you might say, removes imagination.
Yes. And I think you hit it right on the head of the nail, is that I think much of our indigenous ways is orally transmitted. As Russell Means says, you know, we don't put things on dead leaves. And it's kind of an interesting concept, which for a long time I didn't get a chance to sort of redeem that part of my life until later on I realized people were saying, you're very intelligent, you know a lot of things. And it's really being able to function in two language epistemology, you know, perspective, what lenses am I looking through? Mm-hmm. And so it's being able to look through the indigenous lens and the worldview of colonization, education, you know, the industrialization sort mm-hmm. of flattens things out and flattens time out. Mm-hmm. So in reality, time is viewed as rolling on you, and how much you're at peace will determine how you function within that time and space. Whereas mm-hmm. the Hellenized Neoplatonic view of time is more penetrating, and that's where you get this Greek perspective, you know, seize the moment rather than receive the moment. Mm. Understanding those two time dimensions, there's a lot of juxtaposed going on within our culture, and we're not picking it up, mm-hmm. mainly because we're not looking through this marginalized indigenous perspective.
Right. Well, I think, you know, when you talk about seeing time linearly or circularly is a huge difference. Like you say, it's a whole cosmological worldview of difference in how you perceive and apprehend the world.
Yeah. And it gets repeated over and over in front of us, like how we view healing, how we view the climate. Right now, we're really sort of nervous and fearful about what's happening in the climate, instead of realizing that we have to coexist with the environment and how we adapt to that and how we transform ourselves in that adaptation is so key, instead of having this systemic view of colonized perspective where we have to react and we mm-hmm. have to fix this machinery, when in reality this natural cycle, this natural system is right. not a machine. It's really a part of what I call indigenous fractal cosmology, which mm-hmm. if we layer ourselves in those cultural capacity, like plant hyphae or nanoparticles within the charges that the fungi and the bacteria draw into a lot of these chars, whether it be biochar, whether it be natural cycles, mm-hmm. all are happening in front of us, but we're not stepping into that reality.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, as you said, you've talked about that separation from the environment, which comes from that industrialized kind of my intellectual mindset or rational thought, kind of established human beings outside of their environment as something separate.
Yes.
Can you speak a little more about that, or actually just address what is, when you say indigenous regenerative intelligence, what do you actually mean?
Yeah, that's a really good, I had this in a dream. I was trying to help articulate and because we have so many folks coming through, different nationalities, different countries, different folks, we have to articulate, you know, what it is that we were doing. We started out as a demonstration farm, which eventually collapsed on itself because it was like going to a petting zoo or a zoo experience. And so what we needed to do was move into an experiential awakening. Mm. So the farm itself, we don't necessarily, it's not because James is sharing all this information about indigenous spirituality. It just happens in the context of our farm. Mm-hmm. So the indigenous regenerative intelligence came to me. Indigenous is using local materials, making your pens round, approaching things from the farm in a circular pattern that everything gets used within that. It's a closed system, and it's really moving towards self-reliance. And in that context, you know, really capturing what was happening in front of you and not putting it to waste. Mm-hmm. Because it's not producing any production or currency-based development. It was primarily because it felt right in our hearts that we were in sync with nature. So that indigeneity is something that needs to be shared philosophically across the world, that we are all indigenous to this world. Why mm-hmm. send rockets to another planet? Because we colonized and destroyed this right. planet here, when we should have been coexisting. And that's the indigeneity, is really coexisting with what you have. Mm-hmm. And then the regenerative, I know it's in bed with a lot of corporations right now. It's mm-hmm. a sexy word, it gets thrown around, but we just wanted to use that because we degenerated the soil that we're working with. Was my grandfather plowed the heck out of the soil. Mm-hmm. Topsoil blew off. So mm-hmm. degenerated. So what we needed to do was regenerate it, start from zero and move up. We know that, you know, we know that this situation here on Earth is not good, especially on our property, on our land. Well, even that word property, it's not right. My property.
I know.
We don't own the land. The land owns us. So mm-hmm. those kind of concepts, I think, are in front of us. So regenerative meant really just starting from zero, moving up mm-hmm. to get those microbes working, to get the use of the nanoparticles, to incorporate the plant hyphae, making sure there's a connect. We're having conversations with plants, which mm-hmm. I think Western perspective says it's animistic, which I think right. has marginalized us to a large degree. But in reality, there's so much energy happening on the farm that if mm-hmm. we tap into that, it becomes regenerated in a lot of capacities. And then the intelligence is honoring those things that we have dishonored. And we have dishonored the land. We have dishonored the microbes. We have dishonored the plants. Mm-hmm. We have monocrop. We have done a lot of things of dishonor, not mm-hmm. even considering the perennials, which has a higher nutrient density than annual crops. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of things of dishonor that the intelligence needs that platform on which it needs to be honored and given dignity to.
Well, you know, also I was wondering would you say for you, intelligence and wisdom, are they interchangeable, or is there a reason why you specifically chose the word intelligence?
Yeah. Well, the intelligence is recognizing that it's more of a objectified language conversation that you're having with the plants or with the land or with the water molecules, whatever. It's that kind of transition that begins. It's the initial sort of covenant that you build, you know, in this relationship with, not mm-hmm. a treaty where it can be easily cut up and, you know, lawyers are involved, but a covenant mm-hmm. is a larger tribe and a smaller tribe, the smaller tribe going to the larger tribe and saying, let's cut a covenant so you won't come in and destroy mm-hmm. our tribe. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. there's a relationship that gets established, and in that relationship, we have to honor one another. So in that perspective of sort of contextualizing it with the farm and with the intelligence, it's the beginning greeting process. Like you say, aloha, I say ya te he. Mm-hmm. It's that relationship that gets built and then moves into a deeper understanding. You move into knowledge, which is just knowing a lot. You're educated. You're, mm-hmm. you're receiving a lot of information. It's head knowledge. Mm-hmm. But the wisdom is the heart knowledge. Mm. Wisdom, you're getting into a deeper level of this connection between knowledge, wisdom, and then moves into a spiritual awakening that we sort of connect with this deeper relationship with nature.
Mm-hmm. Could you talk about feeling? Because I think that's also part of the problem with, say, Cartesian thought, because feeling is not really honored, and yet with Indigenous traditions the world over, feeling is essential. You feel the world, you feel everything that you're connected yes. with, and that's an imperative.
Yeah, and that's what's happening. I think, Carrie, you're exactly right, is that what's happening is there's an awakening going on all over the world. COVID, climate, all these things that are kind of in a state of transition. In a mm-hmm. state of, so it's really a basis for opportunities for this, for us to step into and become aware of what's around us mm-hmm. and then how we participate in this connectivity with humility, not arrogance. So if you look at philosophy of industrial Western perspective, it really began to originate with Descartes saying, I think, therefore I am. And then Francis Bacon going after the women healers mm-hmm. and then establishing this, you know, white male dominance,
right.
which is part of the machinery. It's a part of their brain, the mm-hmm. side of their brain that says, you know, we can control this. We can yeah. we can deal with this. And there's, as Indigenous people, we always try to look at the balance of male and female. Mm-hmm. We're talking a lot about the female aspect of the earth, when in reality, there's a lot of things involved with Father Sky, with the idea of that connectivity with the molecules and getting that biotic pump going again. So there's mm-hmm. There's some things that we're missing in this process, ancestral knowledge that was based on moving into indigenous fractals, the cosmology, the relationship with the earth, and how we are participants with it, not controlling it, not dominating it, not making it mechanical, right. Which is really we're at really the end stages, as most prophecies have been made through our indigenous elders, is that we're at the end stage right now where we can either turn or move into these marginalized perspectives of how to keep things intact, mm-hmm. or we're going to continue this process. Because let's look at it this way. The Western European mindset culture cannot take agriculture further because they've degraded it. They degenerated right. to the point mm-hmm. that 40,000 years of elder culture knowledge is not mm-hmm. being used and not being incorporated. And when mm-hmm. I say science, I'm talking about the reductionist siloed thinking, mm-hmm. Petri dish, versus that of yeah. indigenous observational perspective and sending it through oral traditions, continuation of this year after year observation. And that's really what indigenous science is to us, is that we're observing all this cosmology in front of us. And then we're creating songs and dances and different things that we celebrate, you know.
Right. I would say there is indigenous science, right? But it's spiritually based.
Yes.
It's a different perspective versus, like you say, versus being like a head kind of intelligence or a way of approaching
well,
it
that's,
from
that's, the head. That's the what do you call it? Checks and balance is really our spiritual ethics. Not morality. Morality is what you do in front of people, but ethics is what you do when you're alone, you know? So when you're alone with nature, what is the process that's taken place? Are you becoming attached or disenfranchised with that whole reality? So in that understanding of nature, it's happening all around us. And like I said, we're not stepping into that reality and working with the systems that are so sophisticated. And right. science will continue to verify what I'm talking about. Indigenous science have already verified a lot of things within their culture, but they haven't been, they've been so marginalized that they haven't really had the fair shake to compete mm-hmm. with reductionist science. Because mm-hmm. most of reductionist science becomes siloed. It becomes capitalized. It moves into a currency-based economy, which further detaches us, and we become the co-owners of the intelligence of that technology, and then right. we start selling.
Patented.
Yeah,
<That's>
exactly. <right. laughs> And then we start selling this to a larger audience, which moves into just consumerism. We've created such a huge impact, a footprint of consumerism. That's all everything is set up, Amazon and different companies. It's really for you to buy more stuff. Instead mm-hmm. of looking at what is the nutrient density of my foods that I'm eating, not mm-hmm. what somebody has created someplace else and has dumbed it down because of the synthetic fertilizers. And now I'm eating all this, and then I'm eating cardboard. On top of that, I'm eating all the chemicals that have been sprayed on there.
Right. Yeah. James, we are going to take a break right now, and we will come back and speak more about Spirit Farm and its right. evolution.
Thank you.
Hey, listeners, quick break here. We hope that you are enjoying Eco Justice Radio. Stay connected by subscribing on all major podcast apps and visit our website, ecojusticeradio.org, to check out previous shows and guests, listen to extended episodes, get connected with us on social media. Today, you are listening to Indigenous Regenerative Intelligence, a Navajo Perspective, with host Gary Kim and guest James Skeet, Executive Director of Covenant Pathways and Spirit Farm in New Mexico.
So we are back with James Skeet, co-founder of Covenant Pathways and Spirit Farm. James, could you speak about the evolution of Spirit Farm and why you said that the demonstration farm collapsed on itself and then you changed it, or it morphed into more of an experiential awakening. So how are people coming and spending time with you or learning from you, what actually happens at Spirit Farm now?
Yeah, we've had a lot of sort of morphing that's gone on, but for me it's like a collapse, you know, because it's my heart and soul, you know, with what we thought could be a sort of a plausible and practical approach to farming. Our intention was really, my wife and I moved out of managed care, which we felt like managed care wasn't connecting the dots. One of the dots was that food is medicine. Mm-hmm. And that dot was disconnected. And so instead of moaning about all this, we decided to move into sort of a pragmatic approach, practical approach to taking theory. And that's how we took a deep dive into soil science. Elaine Ingham and Dr. Johnson, and now Mary Lucero is a PhD in the biology aspect, genetics, and different things mm-hmm. like that. So we just fell in love with the soil and what could happen in this very brittle climate environment. Mm-hmm. So we morphed into demonstrating it in front of our indigenous people that many of them have been colonized, many of them had stopped growing, many of them become further detached and commoditized. I'm writing a newsletter right now called The Commodity Indian, which mm-hmm. refers to when we made things cheap, when we have dumbed down our nutritional foods and some other things. By the way, I have a lot of stuff blogged in our website, spiritfarmnm.org. And you can take a deep dive to some of the things I'm sharing. Eventually, I'd like to see if we can manage to write a book of all the mistakes that we've made. You know, one is called Distracted by Nature. And so that's going to be interesting, because we approach this whole concept of farming from a very Western agricultural standpoint, originally. And then what we morphed into was that we saw us building the soil, the microbes in the soil. We took a deep dive into the fungal and bacteria ratio and on and on. And as the years went by, we saw this sort of robust annual crops that we did. And then we moved into pre-annual crops that are around here that the indigenous people knew about. And then we finally morphed into the last 3 years into experiential farm. And we have animals, chicken, turkeys, chiral sheep, which I want to make sure that we talk a little bit about, and the pigs, and I even graze my pigs on cover crops, stuff like that. Looking at Alan Savory's holistic management, which I thought was a very linear approach to, you know, land. So we're modifying a lot of these things. We even modified the bioreactor with the Johnson Sioux and also the Elaine Ingham, and we collapsed where it would use less water. So as we morphed into different things, I like that word morph, we morphed into different perspectives, we were constantly observing and researching and combining both reductionist science and as well as observational science. And we began to see this almost a changing of our souls as we work with the soil. And there was a spiritual connection that was missing. And that's the thing, Carrie, is that what's missing in all the things that we're doing in the Americas right now, there was a point where we would have moved into some spiritual connectivity and understanding and making this country what it is. We ended up marginalizing people and using our own European concepts that I think 200 years have degraded the soil, have ruined the environment, and have done some damage. And we've got nothing left to give to our generation that's coming.
Like you said, it's shut down that ability to observe nature. You could see right away that it was being ruined. That you're overplowing or tilling is ruining the microbes, et cetera. You could observe that if you were connected. But
we're really careful on what we say, like pioneer, discovery, we're at the frontier, because all of those are European words of conquest. It's like watching the Planet of the Apes, you know. forbidden zone, you know, different things. Like, yeah, it's like we're moving into a very scientific stuff that's going on. But at the same time, our culture is becoming very degraded. Mm-hmm. Our relationships are further detached and we live in fear. It's because mm-hmm. we're constantly viewing this technology as if it were something that will benefit my soul when it doesn't. Right. And there's people that are almost simultaneously changing all over the world. And if we don't do it, somebody else is going to step into it, because that's the way nature works, is that he's going to call on somebody that's going to get out and make a difference. And so we just feel honored that we're able to step into it and hear it, even in this corporate world that we live in. I kind of see it as like the diagram of this labyrinth of this man in the maze. We went mm-hmm. out to the very outskirts, and now we're migrating back to our hearts. And that's we so love what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And I never got this joy when I was working as an office worker, corporate setting, you know, working with the CEO there in New Mexico, rolling out the Obamacare. I did not have that. I mean, that was always something that wasn't right. You know, we're pimping people to get money in so that we can get the state more money, so that we can do more right. synthetic drugs to the people, and just we're just putting out fires.
Maybe that's a good time to speak about transformative adaptation and how you talked about, like, we did everything that we were supposed to do. We did the study, we worked for corporations, and you were never fulfilled, never happy, until you went back to farming, and which was going back to your ancestral roots, going back to your native, you know, ancient wisdom. So if you could speak about transformative adaptation, why it's important to adapt and change the system.
I'm biting at the bit to talk about that, because when I was working with NGOs all over the world, we really stepped into this sort of, what is poverty? How do we develop communities in third world country? Even those concepts are very Western colonial concepts, you know. But I was working as a program writer and developing some of these things. And one of the things we came across was, how do we define poverty? And the way we defined poverty in the end product was a lack of alternatives. It's really just a one choice. And it was the result of the industrialization that created this sort of tension. So coming back to that, as we look at our communities, what's happened is the indigenous people, just kind of to lay the foundation of your question, is indigenous people viewed land as commons. Mm-hmm. It wasn't to be owned. In fact, Jefferson and Franklin, when they would meet with the Iroquois folks, the Six Nation, they would learn what it meant to be a republic, confederacy. And so a lot of that history was written from a different lens, which emulated their prowess of power, whereas what was missing was the indigenous, because many of them died of diseases, so they were snuffed out from European diseases. Mm-hmm. But what happened at that point was this whole knowledge of a republic was established, but the Native Americans always saw land as commons, as something that is supposed to be used by everybody. Right. But Europeans saw it as possession. So I don't know if I answered your question. I kind of went on the bunny trail.
That's okay. Well, I think maybe from here we could segue into what we may not have time to get through before our next break, but I just wanted to speak about the primary reason for growing food, because you gave a very wonderful example of why are we growing food. We have to remember, from an indigenous worldview, why are we growing food, the purpose of it.
Yeah, the purpose of growing food is much deeper in the Southwest, because it fits into the complexity of our religion. The Zunis, the Hopis, the Acamas, the Lagunas, the Navajos, the Hualapais, the Supais, all those are indigenous people that have worked in this adaptation that you mentioned. And transformation is, we realize that this machinery of the industrial system is so huge, consumerism now, we have to take bite-sized chunks and adapt. But in the end, we're hoping that this transformation takes place. It's like the story, biblical story of the Tower of Babel, where people just get disenfranchised with the work that they're doing in this setting up this industrial system, you know, sending more rockets to other planets instead of, you know, healing our land, healing the people here. And slowly, people are becoming disenfranchised, and so this adaptation is really key. We're not talking about sustainability. I don't want to sustain the system that's put us in this. Sustainability should be a perspective of the future, sustaining the food system. And so that was always been in our environment, the Western, Southwestern, brittle environment, was always the key at the center of our hearts. And the ceremonies and the dances all emulated that relationship with the Creator and Mother Earth and all these things that are connected, so that we can sustain through generations, and we are leaving something behind in that context. So,
and James, if you could speak a bit about the native wisdom of biocosmology, what do you mean when you say this?
I think it's just, let me break it down a little bit, and then I'll get back to that question itself. The bio means life. The cosmology is the different onion layers within the intelligence of beings. And so it's like the two-legged, the four-legged, the plant hyphae, the fungal, the bacteria, and down into the nano levels of this charges within the chart, biochar. Biochar is a good example of that, where it attracts and creates homes for that. And that's really the origins and what the sages really go deep into when they meditate. You know, they move back into this really deep, deep relationship with the earth on charges, on energy. So on the farm, we really try to look at how are we concentrating our energy for that day on the farm. Not, of course, my wife is a Mennonite Amish. She's always doing a list. I said, honey, the problem you're going to have at the end of the day is that the ones that you didn't check off, you're going to lose sleep on that, you know. But if you focus your energy on that, you know, there's a different way of you know, going through the farm that day. So the biocosmology is these onion layers that we're attached to, and how we celebrate that with life through ceremonies, songs. Our clans used to have like a Tatnesadi, means the one that plants in the middle. Usually the middle child is the one that puts the seeds in the ground. It was that level of sophistication. It's the awareness of the context in which you're working in, and what that work means. Is it worship, or is it a to-do list? It this connectivity of listening to the plants and realizing that there's a conversation going on, and they're trying to converse with you? My mom used to say the plants are reaching out to us to heal us. But we don't have that intelligence. We don't have that connectivity. But it's through this biocosmology that I started talking about, just like in Indigenous Regenerative Intelligence. I had to put a name to it. The biocosmology is really missing in the conversation of biology and chemistry. And the approach of agriculture has been very synthesizing chemical into land to control the land, so that the plant is for the plant, not having that relationship in a deeper exudates of roots working with the biology within the system.
So it makes the whole aspect of interdependence and interconnectivity, as you would say.
Yes, that is so key. It's that connectivity with one another, and it's the humility of our hearts to hear. We don't hear because we're not. See, the ego of human beings are so strong. It's so strong that we really have to go through a sweat lodge or a place where there's a just transition that's taking place in our hearts. And when that gets cleaned out, then we move into this just transition of moving through time and space with an understanding of clarity, of our hearts being right, and with humility, you know. And then what establishes is this reciprocity.
You had also spoken about deep dreams.
Yes.
And to me refers back to this like being in conversation with the plants and receiving what the plants are trying to say or teach us. You mentioned that the plants were here first. They are our grandmothers and grandfathers. And so they are our teachers.
Yes. And same way with the bacteria and the fungal, you know, they were here before the plants. And when the plants moved in, see, they have that relationship. And what we've done is, it's nasty. It's not good. It's mm-hmm. the arrogance. Mm-hmm. We're distracted by our arrogance and disrupted by nature, you know, in this day and age. And nature is really disrupting our plan of attack each day and realizing that nature is speaking to us.
Mm-hmm. It's all saying the time.
Something. Yes, it's saying something to us that we need to get our hearts right. Mm-hmm. And that's where the spirituality comes from, is that spirituality is just really approaching those deep dives into the spirit realm. In a way, it's spiritually reductionism, you know. You're reducing yourself to that degree so that you can become more connected to what's going on in front of you. And that connectivity, you realize that you're fully a human being. That was part of the relationship that we have with the Creator, our understanding and our intelligence. All those begin to make sense, and we moved into a time of opportunity, not a time of crisis.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And this time of opportunity is our open door to become fully, fully human.
Mm. Well, you had said something, or you had quoted someone, I don't remember who it was attributed to, but you had talked about that the white man would perceive and how with foresight, but it was always from a distance, whereas the red man was able to have short-sightedness, which was being in the present and being, they only understood what was taught to them by their grandfathers. It's a very different way, you know, being distant,
yeah,
or actually being in the world, connected to nature, connected to all life. So,
well, the lenses in animals, the epistemology, the lenses philosophically, what we're looking through is really key. And I shouldn't, All those are important things in the context of nature. It's wonderful. Right. It's complex. Mm-hmm. Like the sheep have a sort of a horizontal pupil, and it's looking from side to side. And that's what indigenous people are doing, is looking, observing from side to side. Whereas the pupil of a predator is round, and it's siloed, and it's looking to extract whatever it is that's in front of it. And so that extraction is to a point where we are overpopulating a predatory spiritual concept rather than understanding this kind of sense that all things should work together and cohesively, and that we are all connected in some capacity. When animals die, insects die, it diminishes us because we are less of a human being because those things are becoming extinct. And look at what we've done in the last 200 years. It's because of our concept of consumerism and extraction that has put us in the straits.
Yeah. And egocentrism, you know, the Anthropocene way.
Yes. Yeah.
We're at the center of the universe, and we're the ones also to save it, solve it, do everything. We're everything, you know, hook, line, and sinker. James, thank you so much for that. We are going to take another break, and we will come back to talk more about the native wisdom of biocosmology.
Hey, listeners, quick break here. We hope that you are enjoying Ego Justice Radio. Stay connected by subscribing on all major podcast apps and visit our website, ecojusticeradio.org, to check out previous shows and guests, listen to extended episodes, get connected with us on social media. Today, you are listening to Indigenous Regenerative Intelligence, a Navajo perspective, with host Gary Kim and guest James Skeet, Executive Director of Covenant Pathways and Spirit Farm in New Mexico.
Listeners, we're here once again with James Skeet, co-founder of Covenant Pathways and Spirit Farm. How do you encourage, you know, modern people, let's say settlers, you know, who they're not the direct colonizers, they may be the descendants or not, but how do you encourage them to integrate the physical practices with the spiritual? You know, there are millions of people engaged in regeneration, restorative practices, but how about moving beyond also techniques and moving in a deeply connected spiritual way? And I know that is movement and it is happening, but is there anything you can share of encouragement, words of encouragement on this?
Well, to the settler community, I have to move back into this different epistemology. We have to be careful of what we mean by truth. I heard this story one time where this angel kept looking at itself narcissistically every morning. And one day tripped over a little cloud, you know, and slammed into this mirror. And it was the mirror of truth, you know, and it came down to earth and broke in many pieces.
Mm.
And so to this day, people pick it up and say, I have the truth, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's really fragmented right now because of the colonization, because of the industrial era, because of some things that we have done that has really spoken to our individuality, not community.
Mm-hmm.
The opposite side of community is commodity. So, you know, those are things that I think we're starting to see take place. People are slowly dismounting from this Tower of Babel and starting to realize, hey, you know what? I'm disenfranchised. And that, I think, is a good crisis. It's a crisis, not of crisis, but of opportunity. And it's in front of us. This opportunity is right in front of us, and we have to make a choice. Yeah.
I wish you would share, you had shared about the Archimedes and the lever and the fulcrum, and maybe this is a perfect opportunity to speak about that. You talk about being outside of the world in order to change the world.
Well, when I was studying dead white men philosophy, Descartes, you know, different philosophers, I ran across the lost writings of Archimedes. You know, this give me a fulcrum, you know, and a lever long enough, and I can move the world. You know.
Mm-hmm.
And that concept is very much things that come from outside of us sometimes speak a larger truth in us that we need to do, you know. And that's, I think that's where a lot of religion comes from. And that's where human rights come from, you know, is that we can't pull ourselves by our own bootstraps.
Mm-hmm.
We need something outside of ourselves. And we've gotten marginalized. And if you really want your company to grow, I'm speaking to corporations right now, just include diverse people, because they know how to work around these barriers of systematic racism. And now I'm moving into how do we sequester equity instead of talking about equity and or social justice in the larger context. How do we sequester that? You know, what does it look like to sequester that in our communities? So that's going to be the challenge. And the other challenge of agriculture is how do we decentralize the systems, whether it be power, whether it be agriculture, whether it be water. How do we decentralize and use local energies, local markets, local you know, value adds, so that we can really get this community growing again? This whole industrial system has given us a false pretense, false concept, false worldview, that I think these marginalized perspectives seem to come from outer space. But in reality, it's been here. It's just that we've been blinded by what's in front of us.
Well, I think it's when you talk about that E.O. Wilson quote, talking about, you know, human history didn't begin 8 or 10,000 years ago. It goes tens of hundreds of, you know, millions, thousands of millions of years ago. Remembering that the origin didn't begin with us in this time.
No, and I do think even with bacteria and fungi, if you look at them, we don't know if they're the same guys. You know, we don't know if bacteria dies, you know. We don't even know. If you want to discover something, discover the different designs of fungi, you know. It disappears as soon as we put them on the Petri dish, you know. But that's the sacredness of the earth, the sacredness of nature. If when we treat it with that sacred, heavy-duty, you know, energy that's there, then we'll understand a little bit more of what we're listening to and what we're seeing.
Right. When you talk about you mentioned a quote that, you know, nature is strong and resilient, but science gives this false sense of security and arrogance regarding the deep and mysterious nature of Father Sky and Mother Earth.
Woo, that is so cool.
That was you. But, you know, I wanted to ask you, what are your comments about, you know, you talk about the industrialized revolution and how that decimated the natural cycles. But What about the comments about the technological revolution now? We have technology, genomics, AI, more scientific human encroachments are coming and on the way and happening now. Where's the balance and the hubris, and how do we move in a time when that is happening simultaneously as the reawakening?
Yeah, I think that's really interesting because it doesn't have the spiritual ethics. Right. If it did, then we have the balance. We don't right now. It's right. All about making money and mm-hmm. allowing the have-nots to work for us. And then the ones that have, you know, start buying up land, and just a few own so much land and so much property that, you know, we don't know what their richness is. You know, we don't really have that concept. And they're becoming lonelier and fearful because they're going to lose that on the stock market. You know, mm-hmm. all this stuff is prefabricated stuff. You know, it's like furniture you get that's just compressed. You know, it's going to fall apart.
Right.
But
no matter what is done, it's inevitable. The end is inevitable for that system. Yeah. It doesn't work.
What's scary is, and it's what's happened with the derivatives and the banks. And I was talking to a friend of mine that's works in Stanford, and he said, you know, James, that's all this banking collapse because a lot of students were going into the MBA program, the business program, and they didn't really have a bachelor perspective on other ologies that were in the universities. So it became very mm-hmm. siloed. And mm-hmm. so the end product was a lot of these young people moving into the banking system and the stock market, and they were young and they didn't really have any ethics. Well, that's really an example of what we're moving into, is that this intelligence, AI, you know, the technology, it's going to rape us and it's going to kill us and it's going to further dehumanize us and it's going to further pillage and remove a lot of these things that are natural mm-hmm. that have this connectivity with nature.
Well, it feels like that. It's, you know, it's the abiotic versus the biotic, something living versus something that's completely inanimate. And, you know, I don't know what you have to say about when we talk about economies, when you can have, there are so many billionaires being generated every minute. And, you know, our young people are kind of taught to pursue that. And they're able to gain so much wealth, that kind of material wealth, like almost, I don't want to say instantaneously, but so quickly, that's what they pursue, unfortunately. You know, so I don't know what you have to say to the younger generations out there on what their focus should be for the future of the human race.
Well, you know, we've had a lot of young
not just the humans. I don't want to say just humans. Yeah. Life.
A lot of young people have come to the farm, and what's missing in that generation is discipline. Discipline to stick with things. You know, I come from a generation, we didn't have a whole lot. We didn't have a lot of food, so for us to have a job, we hung on to it, you know. This generation, as soon as their feelings are hurt or something changes in them, they'll move into something else. Mm-hmm. And the farm is a really good tool to surface that, like flax on, you know, when you're boiling something, you get all this surface. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I really I can't really speak to that, except we have a lot of interest in young people having an elder spirit. Let me spell that out. That mm-hmm. elder spirit is these young people, somehow or another, they know that the generation that we are in have not handed over anything of value except consumerism. Mm. So they're feeling very trapped, and they're feeling that they need to get a hold of this concept of the biocosmology and the spiritual intelligence and indigenous regenerative, and all those things are really, really key things to them, and they're willing to pay the price. Right. And if they stick with it, I think we can revolutionize. We're at the end days, really. The end. We don't know where this is going to head. We're becoming more and more watered down. You know, our relationships are watered down. Our spirituality is watered down. You know, there's a lot of things of watering down that's taken place. It's not heavy duty medicine anymore. It's really just to keep us occupied long enough so that we feel comfortable in our skin.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But I think there's nothing more inspiring than when we see an elder or elder sharing their wisdom with a youth, and that connectivity is just magical. I've seen it so many times, you know, in this current generation now, to see people meeting each other, finding each other for the purpose, for the common purpose of changing the world.
Yeah.
But changing the world or returning the world to sure. our origins, to that way yeah. we used to live, yeah. you know. What do you say to people who, you know, European settlers, other people finding their ancestral roots, because there's been such a divorce from those original ways of being with the land that so many, every single culture on this planet have that at their origins. We're connected to Earth in animistic, shamanic ways, the ways of the mystery, the ways of you didn't know things from your mind, you knew it from being connected to the cosmos, truly, energetically. You know, what do you say to people to be able to tune into that? You know, you kind of have to step outside of the whole rat race of the world, you know, the mundane world.
I think it's happening almost serendipitously. Mm-hmm. It's happening all over the world. I'm finding a lot of this kind of language that we're speaking right now through this podcast and through the different places that people are hungry for this. And they'll gobble this stuff up, you know. Joyce and I are just really happy to be a part of the energy that's taking place, the synergy that's taking place. And I think it's going to happen whether we're in it or not, you know. I think it's the spiritual sort of intervention that's taking place from nature, mm-hmm. from the creator. And right. You have to embody that. Otherwise, we're going to be totally lost in this whole hurricane that's coming.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Like you said, we have to focus our energy in that same way. So, James, could you please share how listeners can stay in contact with you? And also, you mentioned about your website where they can read your blog and the articles you've posted there. You've got many videos. If you can share some of your links and ways that people can be connected with you.
Sure. I do blogs off and on, and it really, I have to think through this stuff and share it. And what's happening is there's a lot of people that are getting on our newsletters that we send out. Our organization has two different concepts or different labels. One is Covenant Pathways, which is how we started on really studying covenants. The other one is SpiritFarmNM.org. Which okay. is more about the farm and what goes on and what we're learning, what we're researching, taking a deep dive on the Chiral sheep, the biochar, the soil, the remediation of soil, looking at larger landscapes with the different animals, veil grazing, you know, the desert brittle environment perspective. It's all on how you hold your lips. No, it's that's where you can contact us. Our email is NavajoDesigns@msn.com.
James, thank you so much for all that you are doing. Thank you that you have heard and gone back to express your own spiritual understanding and then share that with the world, because it is what so much is needed for people to reawaken to their spirit and to Mother Earth and restore that connectivity. Thank you immensely.
Well, thank you. Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, listeners, to check out the extended recording of this show or to explore our other shows, visit our website, ecojusticeradio.org, and subscribe to the podcast. This has been EcoJustice Radio and our show, Indigenous Regenerative Intelligence, a Navajo Perspective. Thank you to our guest, James Skeet, and thank you always to our listeners. Please connect with us on social media at EcoJustice Radio, SoCal 350, and Adventures in Waste. If you like what you have heard and want others to be informed, subscribe and share the episodes. You have been listening to EcoJustice Radio, a project of SoCal 350. Executive producer, myself, Jack Eit. Producer and co-host, Jessica Aldridge. Co-host, Carrie Kim. And engineer and original music by Blake Quake Beats. And until next time, remember, the power is yours.